This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark hit movie theaters in 1981 and made the Ark of the Covenant story synonymous with biblical archaeology. Now there's a new documentary, Legends of the Lost Ark, that takes a serious look at that unanswered question. What really happened to that holy ark that once sat in the Jerusalem temple? Chris McKinney, a professor of archaeology at Lipscomb University, is director of research for Legends of the Lost Ark. He says Indiana Jones' premise that it landed in Egypt is pretty weak, but there were three other legends worth investigating.
The first legend we encounter comes in a book called The Lives of the Prophets. Specifically, we have biographical details about the various prophets across the Hebrew Bible, some of which is in the Bible. Others are expansions. Like, for instance, Hebrews 11 talks about how some prophets were cut in two. In The Lives of the Prophets, we learn that it's Isaiah that is the tradition that Manasseh, he killed him by cutting him in two. And there's all kinds of these details. And in the life of Jeremiah, which is one of the sections, it talks about how Jeremiah took out the Ark of the Covenant and goes to a place between two mountains, Mount Hor and Mount Nebo, the two places where Aaron and Moses die respectively. He finds a place called the Rock and does a kind of open sesame. It opens, he puts it inside, and then with an iron utensil, I think it says, he writes the name of Yahweh, and there's a cloud that covers it. And then it goes on to say that after this, it will not return until the end. And then at which point, you know, it goes on and says, Aaron and Moses will come back to the place. They'll take out the ark and they'll bring it back to Mount Sinai and we'll relive Exodus 19, you know, the Kingdom of Priests episode, in which they'll unveil the Ark of the Covenant, take off the lid, take out the tablets, and it will be an outpouring of the Spirit. I mean, really fascinating Jeremiah 31 language. So in the film, we explore, okay, where is the legend saying that this location is? And it turns out you have two options. You have Petra, which means in Greek, the rock. And you have another really interesting place called Sela, which is in Jordan. It's called Kibbutz Sela today. There's some really interesting details about how that could be kind of behind this legend.
This legend is somewhat reflected in the Book of Maccabees, which also says that the ark was taken to Mount Nebo in Jordan.
Absolutely. My personal theory is that there is a earlier legend that has Jeremiah doing something with the ark that predates all the three legends that we have. So it's sort of like choose your adventure. It's Jeremiah who does it, maybe with Baruch's help. But where exactly he takes it, that's where the legends differ. And so, yeah, you're right. The next legend is, we call it the legend of the tomb. This appears in the book of 2 Maccabees, which is an excellent book to read. It's really interesting and fun. It's where we get the story of Hanukkah and actually the impetus to celebrate it. There's a couple letters that starts the book in which we have Judeans from Jerusalem writing to their Judean counterparts in Egypt, telling them about Hanukkah and why they should start to celebrate it, which is fascinating. We have a lot of holidays. Here's another one. Here's why. Then they go in and explain what has happened. And the driving force of it is a connection between the first temple and the second temple. How are they related? For the writers and thinkers of the second temple, it's sacrifice. The sacrificial fire that was still burning in Solomon's temple, Jeremiah tells priests to go hide that fire, like the smoldering fire, and tell their descendants so that when they come back, they can rekindle the fire. And it shows this connection through fire. But the story of the ark is so big that the author of the letter can't help but say, well, we also heard this other story about how Jeremiah, with the same people, took the ark and the incense altar and the tablets, and he went out to the mountain where Moses saw the inheritance, and he found a rock cut cave. He places the ark inside, And then the people that are with him, they try to mark the location, you know, X marks the spot. But Jeremiah says, no, don't mark it. It's going to be sealed up until the restoration, until God brings back all his promises, essentially. And so here we have the same kind of detail. Now, this one's not hard to find. It's very clear that what the writer of 2 Maccabees is saying is that the Ark of the Covenant is hid in the tomb of Moses, because sort of behind that is the idea of Deuteronomy 34, where Moses's body is hidden by God and buried, and no one knows where it is till this day. So as I always like to quip, it's sort of like a chamber of secrets in Harry Potter. You know, it's around, but you don't really know exactly where it is. That's where I think the legend of the tomb ends up. Now, there's a whole kind of backstory or thing that builds on this, where we have the Catholic tradition of the Ark being brought to Rome, specifically to the Lateran Church, that seems to be based on a literal interpretation of 2 Maccabees, because, of course, according to the Catholic doctrine, Book of Maccabees is considered canonical. It's deuterocanonical, it's a second canon, if you will. And so, therefore, it has to be a part of what's actually happened. This is connected also with the Arch of Titus, because it was believed that the Arch of Titus, which still stands in Rome today, depicts the Ark being brought to Rome. What I found to be fascinating is that the Ark is a legend multiplier. Not only does it have its own legends that are land-based with Jeremiah and so on, which may have some historical background, but it creates these whole other things, you know, of the Ark being in Rome, because Rome is the new center of the faith. It's the new priesthood. It's Jerusalem, the Jerusalem temple in the center. It's the same thing with Ethiopia. Even though it's not the real one, both the Ark in Rome and the Ark in Ethiopia have a longer life than the actual Ark of the Covenant in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And they have that same level of significance, especially for Ethiopia, for their civilizations.
So there are these two boxes which look like the Ark that exist today that are in the Lateran Church in Rome and a church in Ethiopia.
Yeah, well, sort of. There's kind of more to the story. So with the Lateran Church, about 200 plus years ago, 1750 or so, the Pope decides to remove them from public display. But for at least 600 years, from the time of the First Crusade up into the 18th century, it was on display, and we have historical written text describing it. It's certainly not the Ark, because the Ark was never in the Second Temple for Titus to get, but it was an important relic, at least for 600-700 years, if not going back to even the founding of the Lateran Church. Hmm. In the case of Ethiopia, its origins are even more obscure, but they associate it not with a box, but with a kind of like large tablet that they connect with the Ark of the Covenant.
For those who've just joined us, we're talking with Chris McKinney, a professor of archaeology at Lipscomb University, and our subject is very interesting, the Ark of the Covenant. So there are theories out there, all kinds of different theories about what happened to the Ark.
Yeah, and then the last legend, which is where we end up, and this is actually also in the news, not for the Ark, but we explore with one of the scholars, a physicist named Erez Etzion, who is using muon detection to look for underground hidden cavities in the city of David, and hopefully in the future in other parts of Jerusalem, including the area north of the city of David, where there's lots of such tunnels. And of course, that calls to mind a lot of different ideas about where the Ark might be in tunnels beneath the Temple Mount. Now, it's important to note that there's a lot written on this, and there's a lot of ideas that are out there. Most of those ideas are entirely based on later legends, specifically those that appear in the Mishnah and mostly the Talmud. And so those might be reflective of the earlier legends that we're looking at. But the link between what they're describing in rabbinic literature and what we're talking about in Legends of the Lost Ark is not clear. The earliest legend of the Ark staying in Jerusalem comes from the books of 2nd Baruch and 4th Baruch. And these are in what we call the pseudepigrapha, books that are not actually written by the people that bear their names. And it describes Jeremiah and Baruch on the eve of Jerusalem's destruction, looking out at the armies of the Babylonians and an angel appearing and telling them what to do, essentially saying, speak to the earth and take the temple vessels, including specifically the ark, and deposit them in the earth. The ark is hidden under the temple, and the same line is said, that it will not return again until the Lord returns, until we have this moment of redemption. This seems to be consistent with the same legend that we have across these different sources, where it's Jeremiah, sometime before the destruction, doing something with the ark. And in this particular case, there's a lot of fascinating details, because despite how much we know about the area of the city of David, the Temple Mount remains a kind of black hole that we don't have a whole lot of information about, except from what we read from like the 1850s and the 1860s with Charles Warren. One of the things we explore in the film is an earlier explorer who's forgotten. His name is Imerte Piriati. He comes and he serves as the engineer of Jerusalem before the PEF is there. And he was the last person that had access to these tunnels, more so than Warren or even Wilson. And he made all kinds of claims about them, not actually associated with the Ark. And so one of the hopes is, you know, regardless if the Ark is actually there or not, through this process of muon detection, which is essentially acts like an X-ray. And that's all I'll say, because I'll probably screw up how it actually works. Putting all that together, we have a historical geographical question for the first legend. You know, where is Mount Hor? Where is Mount Nebo? We get to put on our Edward Robinson hat and try to go find it. For the Mount Nebo question, we have to deal with archaeology and tradition and how we associate and understand ancient sites, both from the Bronze Age all the way through the Byzantine period and the various iterations associated with it. For the last legend, the legend of the Mount, we have to deal with modern politics, modern religious issues, Temple Mount in control of the Muslims, as well as the IAA, the political things associated with that, as well as the cutting edge of science of using muon detection. So what was so fun about it is it exposes you to the wide, varied world that is biblical archaeology. And that's just, in some sense, one aspect of the Ark is its death. You know, when it's lost, the Ark has this whole big story that is beyond that, that we only kind of touch on. It was a fascinating experience.
This interview with Chris McKinney was conducted last October, and we're replaying it at this time because the documentary we've been discussing, Legends of the Lost Ark, just hit the theaters. Perhaps you had a chance to see it, or maybe you'll have a chance in the near future. Chris McKinney is professor of archaeology at Lipscomb University. We have a link to the trailer for Legends of the Lost Ark at our website at radioscribe.com. Also a link to the podcast that Chris does with Kyle Keimer on biblical archaeology. Other resources you will regularly find on our website include breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority and information on Artifacts, our biblical archaeology news magazine. That's all at radioscribe.com. If you're listening on Spotify or some other podcasting platform, why not give us a positive review to help others find this program? I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.